let you know what this session is about. It's not about a long lecture, first of all. It's seen by me, the convener, as the first of two parts, the second part to be Saturday at 6:20, same time slot, the day after tomorrow, a two-part discussion covering a couple issues that are dear to my heart, and after spending a number of days here at Holden Village, seemed to me to be very pertinent ground worthy of discussion in this setting, simply because I think people have done some really good work on these issues. The issues being work, as Ingrid said, for tonight, and on Saturday night, citizenship. Come on in, Dorothy. Let's set a spell. The things I passed out to you are both pieces of work, obviously, on the statement of the challenge of life, work, and worship is clearly something that arose right out of Holden Village. The other piece I also was given this week at a welcoming staff meeting, which is excerpts from Dorothy Soule, or however you say her name, book, To Work and to Love, both of them being, I felt, ripe starting points for a discussion on work. And it's not simply, of course, a discussion on work. It's a discussion on work that is more reflective of a calling, or understood by the worker as their calling. So, with a short introduction, hi Diana, myself to you, so that we can start out then. After that introduction, I'd like us to just go around and say our names to each other and possibly the work that we see ourselves doing in response to our own calling. But let me just gab for a minute, 5 minutes or so, to let you know where I'm coming from with this discussion. I'll introduce myself in terms of my work. I have a restaurant which two or three days ago I started out my teaching sessions this week talking about, and that's called the Heartland Cafe, and I'll refer to it in our discussion as you will refer to your workplaces, and you should feel free to do so. I am not, at this point in my life, a practiced teacher per se, so please have patience with my run-on sentences and my somewhat tawdry organization, but I'm a little more prepared here. The Heartland Cafe could have written, or the staff of the Heartland Cafe could have come up with a similar statement in some ways to this. And in fact, it's one I'm going to bring back to the staff and let them look at, see if they want to do anything with it. The other part of my life and work is in politics, Chicago politics, which is why citizenship will be the second half of this discussion Saturday night. And not limited, of course, to Chicago politics in my case, but nation and global politics as well. So that's the second part of this. I do feel they're very connected. I was raised Catholic, heavily Catholic, and I've moved from Catholic with a capital C to Catholic with a small c, which means everybody's God is okay by me. I believe we're all children of the same one, whatever he, she, or it is called. And so that we can talk about issues about relating to how we work and why we work and what we work, and be speaking the same language regardless of what we call ourselves, Christian, Buddhist, et cetera, down the road. I know this is true because I've seen it true in a place like Chicago where diversity is what's going on, and you don't have the ability to make the same kind of assumptions that maybe even at Holden, even with its diversity of approaches people make, and that is that we're all Christian. I find that without even that protection, there is something that we can hold in common with our fellow citizens about looking at our work. So let me just throw out a couple ideas, and then, as I said, we'll just identify ourselves and our work in the context of discussing what I've just passed out, as well as our own ideas, obviously. All right, just three little hope maybe syllogistic possibilities. One, our work is our calling. That is, whether you call it your ministry, your path, or what's going on for you at the time. In some sense, some of us would start this kind of a discussion out saying, thinking, believing our work is our calling. Then there's another sentence. This is for up or down on your part later. Our work is our life. Now, I can only say that that would be okay as long as we said we were including play in our work and work in our play. Otherwise, it's pretty arguable on its face. But the syllogism that I came up with, does that mean that our life is our calling? And that, in fact, we're called to live our lives, to work our lives, be our lives. Okay. This statement is the statement of the staff, a put-together thing by the working staff of Holden Village. And that has, I think, as I said, I'm going to bring it back to my restaurant, to a staff that looks and feels in many ways very much like the Holden Village staff. I ran out of the little ones, but I bet you know that one. And let them see what that is. But resonating with parts of that, you may find yourself even more inclined to be drawn into some of the notions that, how do you say her name? Sol? Zola? The
Sole.
Sole, to work and to love. So let me just throw out, starting with Sole, that she offers work as it is depicted in Genesis is not a curse that descends on the human being after the fall. It is, from the beginning, an expression of the human project of liberation, of its dignity and integrity. So that, in fact, we are lifted up by our work. We are blessed to have work. Acknowledging what a special opportunity Holden Village provides to its workers, nonetheless, I resonated with their statement. I want to know how many of us do, and while doing what specific work. So, as I promised, this is not a lecture, although I'll blab. I want to start with finding out names, just real simple, names and what your vocation is, and if that's different than your work right now. All right? Is that all right? I'll start with you, because you have that quizzical look on your face. Well, you know, if you find that there's a difference right now, that one is not the other, that the work you do, the job you perform, is not filling your calling, say that, and then say what your calling is, or what you think it might be. And you start with your name. And this won't take long.
Okay. My name is Tracy, and I work as a controller for a private corporation in Minneapolis, and right now in my life it is good. It is what I want it to be.
All right.
I'm John Strumsa. I work for a computer manufacturer as a technical support for sales. And it's kind of where I've been for quite a while, and I have other outlets through church that I consider more of a vocation or helping type of.
Mm-hmm. My name is Valley Long. I was trained as an agriculturist in college. I was a county agricultural agent for 13 years, a feed mill operator for 9 years, and a wheat farmer for 28 years. I'm now retired and having a ball. I still have a work ethic. I'm a volunteer leader at the museums. I work at the church. I help people. I don't make a dime. Nobody ever gave me a tip, but I'm busy. I still have a horse. I was raised in the horse days. Drove big teams of horses when I was 12, 14, 15 years old, and I still have a saddle horse.
Lucky guy.
My name is Valerie, and I teach religion at a private liberal arts college. And I did go to school for 25 years, so I could get to do that, and it's the only job I've ever had that I didn't hate. So,
so, I process it.
So I hope it's my calling.
Well said.
My name is Ruth Johnson. And I don't know if I should say I work or not. My husband and I have been retired for 22 years, so I just have kept on doing what I did for 22 years before that.
Which is?
Well, keeping house. We brought up 4 children. That's a lot of work, a lot of fun. Mm-hmm.
Can we establish that raising children is a lot of work?
Yes.
And vocation.
It's a job.
And a job. And a calling.
Yeah, it really is. It's fun, and I like my life the way it is now.
You've been retired for 22 years?
Right.
Ooh, how fortunate.
Yeah. And I came with my daughter-in-law up here. She's a lovely person.
We'll take your word for that.
I'm Mary Ann, and I am a church musician and a private piano instructor. And I'm happy. It is me.
I'm Laurel, and I trained with a master's in psychology, and I've been doing human service work, including a stint in campus ministry, which brought me out to Washington State. And I've been working for over 2 years at Western State, the psychiatric hospital, as a recreation leader. And I'm going to be changing wards when I get back. I'm going from a chronic ward to an acute ward. So I'm not quite sure how that's going to be, but I just was looking for a change.
Mm. I'm Fred Cosley. I'm retired. Civilian in the U.S. Air Force. Mm-hmm. I worked in the Air Force in management and procedures as an inspector for compliance with tax and regulations.
You're retired for how long?
22 years.
You guys hang out together?
I've been here long enough.
That's great. All right.
I'm Sharon, and I've been struggling with this issue for a while, and I think that I would define my vocation as being a peacemaker or being contributing to the healing and the wholeness of our beings, of our spiritual and psychological and physical well-being. Right now, I'm doing work, you know, with nutrition and food as a cook, and I think that in some ways that's kind of a longer line to my vocation, but not real specifically. So I enjoy doing that. It's kind of like a tangent of it, but it's not like hitting the nail right on the head for me. But I still work a lot.
Thanks.
Hey, I'm Pauline, and I started off by teaching school, and I left that to have one private pupil here.
Yes.
I guess it's
going
pretty well.
Hope
it's been a good experience.
Mm-hmm. I'm Merle, and I'm a retired pastor. And we're just getting into our swing of volunteering now because we just retired at the end of November full time. So this is just a volunteer thing. We're going to find some more volunteer things after we get back to St. Paul again.
My name's Gary, and I guess I've done a lot of things, but a lot of it for me is learning about myself and learning about other people. So it's kind of a general. So a lot of the things I do seem to be related to that. So there's not always a direct correlation between my work specifically, but it seems like I have different goals that are kind of broader goals than what my work is.
You touched on a common thing there. Made a note.
I'm Andrea, and I'm a graduate student, but I also teach. I'm teaching assistantships, and I guess I consider teaching my vocation. What I'm excited about, and kind of along the lines of what Sharon was saying. I guess I kind of feel as though my job is to try and make people whole too. I teach art history, and I think that art is something that kind of heals people and enriches their lives. And I guess I see that as really my role. So.
Okay. Should we flip back and cover some back people there behind Andrea? Ingrid?
Okay, I'm Ingrid, and I teach urban studies in Chicago for money. And that's certainly part of my vocation because it enables me to deal with justice issues with college students and also with self-fulfillment kinds of issues in college students. But it's only part of my work. My real vocation includes that, but it is also work in the community in Chicago and work through various church outlets in Chicago and work at Holden. So I guess I view my vocation as a broader thing than simply my work, but I'm blessed to have the work that pays me money be included among those things that is my vocation.
You also happen to do some work as a parent?
Oh, I'm a parent.
Oh, yeah.
I work real hard at it and love it. Mm-hmm. Take it seriously. Fortunately, I have a co-parent that shares that.
My name is Andra, and I've been called to be a nurse. And what that means to me is that I've been called to care in many creative ways. And mostly I feel called to care for children and their well-being on Earth. Right now I'm called to be the nurse at Holden. It feels like that's my calling. I'm resisting it mostly 100%, but that's what my calling is right now, for some reason.
Well, maybe we can jam a little acceptance your way tonight. John, you just joined us, but we're talking about who we are and what our calling or vocation or work is, if they are different.
All right. Yes, I'm John Fish, and some of the work I get paid for is the urban studies program in Chicago. But the work I spend probably as much time at is, and I feel almost equally called to, is the Sanctuary and Central American Organizing. And sort of solidarity with Central Americans and organizing around that solidarity. And two things.
You're also a parent.
Also,
it's funny that I have to remind
these
guys.
Very little time now since they're all scattered, but it's enjoyable now that
the work, the heavy work is over. In other words,
retired from here in the same house.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So I have a spouse, and that takes work.
All right.
More work than I thought when I entered into that contract.
All right. Honesty. Okay, right in front of you.
My name is Melissa. I work as a graphic designer at a liberal arts college in Minnesota. And I very much like what I do. I sometimes feel a little pulled, though, toward more people-oriented work. And so, who knows, down the line, maybe I'll be counseling or something like that. I have absolutely no training in that, but I still sometimes think, well, maybe something.
Another key, absolutely no training. We'll get back to that one.
My name is Donna Drown. I'm a registered nurse and have been so for the last 13 years, mainly critical care. And now I'm going to pursue graduate studies at UCSF in San Francisco and get a degree in teaching cardiovascular pathophysiology. All that specific.
Uh-huh. Do you want to stay
through
the summer?
we'll get back to that, Andra. All right, right next to Donna is...
My name is Dar, and I'm presently a head resident at a women's dorm at St. Edward's University in Austin, Texas. It's a Catholic university. So it's a new job for me. Haven't been here quite a year. Love it. Everything I've done has kind of been basically that kind of a job, people-oriented, from working full-time in Lutheran camping ministries to being on staff at a church, working with youth ministry, and So right now it seems like all that I've been doing has been in that direction, and I'm still also seeking some more direction as whether I want to go back and get certified as a teacher and head that direction. And I'll be doing Narnia here, so I should know by the end of the summer.
Yeah, right. Okay, back there, John?
Yeah. My name is John, and I'm a retired teacher. I do volunteer work in our prairie school. I tutor and I work with kindergarten children. And I also work in the five various shelters in the Omaha area. And now that I give myself away, I find that I'm busier than ever.
Right. Are those homeless shelters? Shelters for the homeless?
Yes.
Any of them? Yeah, probably
we
not a
one. Provide meals and a shelter for the evening. Mm-hmm. I'm on the staff of one.
Mm-hmm. That is important work. Do you know what we're doing here? Mm-hmm. Have you been? Okay. Great.
My name is John. I just finished student teaching, and as far as I can tell, I think that's pretty much my calling is to be a teacher, a social studies teacher. Right now I'm unemployed looking for teaching work. And I think I've had a lot of like summer work working with adolescents and things like that. And I think that's where I want to be, and that's where I really like being, is working with adolescents. And I thought I could get more of that as a teacher.
My name is Anne, and I'm a pattern maker and production engineer for ski clothing.
Oh.
And
is it Anne with an E?
Yes.
Thank you.
And I'm constantly learning new things, and as long as I'm doing that, I love my job. I love the work.
That's good. Great. Thanks. Dorothy?
My name is Dorothy Bennett. And I retired from 41 years of public education, both in classroom teaching and in administration. And I retired about 17 years ago. And since that time, I've spent this will be my 50th season, teaching Lapidary in Fulton Village, and I love it.
It loves you, too.
I really, really intended to be a doctor. And I directed my undergraduate work in that direction, but felt I had to teach to earn enough money to go to medical school. And I fell in love with teaching. And I thought, this is so much fun. Why go on to anything else?
And do all that hard work. Not the teaching, it's the hard work. All right.
My name is Jeff. I'm a campus pastor and parish pastor at a parish in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, at the University of Pennsylvania campus. Is that all?
Is it your calling or happy?
It's definitely my calling. Whether I'm happy or not, I work too hard. I work too hard, so it sometimes isn't so much fun.
I'm Diane, and I'm kind of in idle right now. I was a florist, and I thought that was my calling. I really enjoy that, and I miss being a florist. It's a lot of hard work. Most people say, oh, how fun, but there's a lot more to it than fun. And it's a lot of stress and a lot of long hours. And intend on going to school next fall to become a dental assistant, to change my career direction, that a dental assistant pays a little bit more, and maybe become a hygienist eventually.
All right. Susan.
Last but not least, I'm Susan. I went to school for almost as long as Val did to be a teacher, but then I wasn't a teacher for a long time. I worked at a particular restaurant in Chicago, which became a part of my calling. And then a miracle happened and I got to be a teacher. And so my calling and my vocation once again felt like it had all these wonderful things in it. And I teach for the aforementioned many times urban studies program in Chicago. I've always been somebody who does about three things at one time, and the other thing I always did with my life is do politics and community organizing in Chicago. And lo and behold, I also have another job right now that I'm getting paid for to work on the staff of Senator Paul Simon. And so right now, it's all sort of come to this amazing moment where I'm actually getting paid in two jobs to do both the things that I really feel I'm called to do. So
you're here.
Let's hope it holds in that place. It took 35 years to get there. So.
Pat, you joined us, and let's get you introduced here.
Okay, I'm Pat, and I have just come off staff for Young Life, which is a relational ministry, Christian outreach to adolescents. And I felt called to that, and now I'm probably being called to something else, but I haven't quite found out what. So I'm here to help that process.
Okay, I'm gonna just because we got some new people in, I'm gonna do an introduction of myself as well. I'm Katie Hogan, and my current work consists of running the restaurant that I founded 12 years ago, along with a great and able group of management and other staff. As well, I even found myself in a position a year ago to do a job for 5 months on the re-election campaign in Chicago of the mayor, the then mayor, Harold Washington, which was for me also the first time I'd been paid to do something I've done all my life and will continue to, which is political organizing of some kind or another. I have at times been taught to teach and hope to again. Teaching is something that I understand you need to continually learn about in order to do well. That's my introduction of myself. Now, some of the things that got said here are, I think, the nubs of any discussion about work. And let me just throw a few of them back out at you because you said them. Mm-hmm. let's see, I guess it was Gary who said, while he's doing work he likes, and he likes the work he does, the broader question is always hanging out there as to whether or not he's doing exactly towards his heart's desire, I'll call it. Your heart's desire being that the big stuff you hope you could fill, the big jobs you hope you can do, even when you don't know what those jobs are. And let's face it, they don't have these jobs in career placement catalogs. Are we right now? You know? Okay, that's one thing. And then right along the line came Donna, I think, saying, absolutely no training. Who said that? You said. Oh, no, behind you, which is Melissa.
Yep.
Melissa, which is a very important phrase. Okay, absolutely no training. How many people did parenting with absolutely no training? Right? I started a restaurant with absolutely no training. We could go into that. I think absolutely no training has some value. Okay? I think that if you are going after your heart's desire and you are willing to put the effort that requires, absolutely no training can go right out the window. Because in fact, the magic that is attached to your heart's desire will just carry you through it. That and your energy, your willingness to work long hours, whatever. Then we came along to Anne with an E, who said as long as her job includes learning new things, she's satisfied that as soon as that stops happening, she's out of here. I think that there's more to it for Anne than that, but I also think a lot of people feel that as long as the environs and the terrain that they cover in their job keeps on being somewhat interesting, a new terrain with some surprises and certainly learning involved, that we're challenged enough to stay there and we feel like we're making something of ourselves enough. Then came Jeff with a very important working too hard. I mean, the man is doing his calling, but what was the second thing he said was, I think I'm working too hard. Okay, I've been there too. I think that we could, I really mostly want us to throw this around, and when people are finding themselves looking for the next thing, that was the last comment I started to copy down, was Pat's, of coming here with some sense, as I have and have had for a number of months, about my own personal work, that it's time for me and that I'm in a process of finding the next manifestation of my calling. My calling is clear to me. It seems like all of your callings are clear to you. What isn't always clear, easy, or laid out for you, and certainly not blueprinted, is how you are able to live with that calling and do it. And that's what we're talking about here. So there are a few people here, and myself included, are at a point where we seek to find the next face of our calling in our lives. And I'd like to ask questions about how people go about that search, and suggestions from anybody about what's required. And this is where I'll go over all over the map. I've handed out something to read, and I've thrown out a question. God, won't somebody take control of this session? So I'm asking you guys to. If I assume you came here to talk about this stuff, so Sharon, how do you choose to look for the next phase of your work? You're obviously very, very grounded in the work you do. She came and visited my restaurant, unbeknownst one to the other, a couple summers ago, and she was doing very good work along the Peace March, the Great Peace March that crossed the country, and she dealt with doing kitchen for that moving mass. I have no small amount of respect for pulling off that feat and knowing that they did bridges of milk crates when it rained from one food trailer to the next. So I respect what she's done, and she's been in what I've do, and so I'm just putting the onus on you, Sharon, because you're in a good amount of poverty.
Yeah, right. The world is set up that way, it seems, it feels like sometimes, you know. Oh, I'm sorry, I thought you would finish. The world isn't set up to, it's real hard to follow your heart's desire through a world that is set up to like, you know, make you run into walls on that one. Especially with, and this one comes up with students all the time, is that they're under this pressure to pick it and then go do it the minute that they're done. And they want so badly to be able to follow their heart's desire, but they say, my mom, my school, my loans, my, you know, the respect of my community, and it's really hard to bring out of that.
Yes, Inga.
As a person who was really thrown by the question of what my real work was when I was given a sabbatical from my work, I would like to hear from the retired people in this room about how it was for them when they retired and suddenly had a steady income and had time on their hands to think about their vocation and their life. I think there's much wisdom there that we could gather, because there they could really go for with the real them, the real you, you know, the real, you could figure out how you really wanted to give and what you really wanted to do.
Anybody have a... John, do you have something to tell her about that?
New retirement will come up in June. I decided to go early 2 years because the school teacher and the little darlings aren't darlings anymore, and everybody knows that. And so I took a look around, and I saw the boys down at Louis' Bar that were putting on about 10 pounds a month sitting there, and I thought, well, I don't want that. And I thought, well, I don't want soap operas. So about 5 months before I retired, I gradually got involved in shelter work.
Mm-hmm.
And then it went from one shelter to another, and pretty soon I was working in five shelters with one job every day, nothing too big, but something to go to every day. And then I got involved in the parish school. And so
So you feel valuable?
Pardon?
You feel valuable?
Oh, yes. You know, in the wintertime, I just go around handing out cough drops at the shelters, and they don't cost much. And, you know, somebody will brighten up, and somebody said to me, I remember you, you gave me a cough drop. That's not much, but a cough drop's a cough drop. And yes, it's the shelters all need volunteers, and Saturday I keep to myself. And Sunday's my big day, because nobody will volunteer on Sunday, so I work almost 10 hours on Sundays at the various shelters.
Wow.
John, how does that work make you feel now compared to how you worked before?
School teaching was satisfying, but I think this is probably the most satisfying thing I've ever done, because I never knew street people. I didn't even really know they existed. And I've met a lot of them. And some of them you can help, and some of you will never help.
Mm-hmm.
And I work now with one young fellow that has an ARC. And that could go into AIDS within the next year or two. And the last studies I saw is 80% of our cases do go into AIDS.
Mm-hmm.
And I found I was doing too much for him, so I had to pull back, because he can work. There's a term for that. What is it?
Which?
You do too much for somebody that's...
Overextending?
Yeah, you overextend. You shouldn't give them money. You should make them work as long as they can.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But you learn these things as you go along.
What about some other retired people? Pauline or Earl?
Me? When have you been retired since November?
Give us a break, huh?
First 3 months, I was just basically going through all my records
the
and
papers.
Notes and pictures and everything, so then we just came on here after that. So we really haven't got started on it.
He sounds nice already. Frank, any reflections on that?
Well, I'll retire, of course, and I feel that I've put in my time. However, I'm very busy. I want to enjoy life. So I want to become a better bowler, a golf player, and I'm taking dancing lessons.
All right. All right. Anything, Valley, to offer?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure much. But on the question of what Ingrid raised.
Well, did you ask me?
I asked Valley first, but both of you, we need to ask both of you.
I don't really have too much to add, but since he said he was a retired pastor, so is my husband. And our work was in the rural part of the world entirely, mm-hmm. never in any city.
Mm-hmm.
And it was started in the 1930s, and you know what they were.
Wild and woolly, I hear.
And poor.
Poor.
Good. We don't hear. But you never retire from the ministry, ever. You never quit working. And if your husband doesn't quit working, you don't either. So.
Right? I agree.
So that's, there's always, like, you're working with shelters. My husband works with shut-ins and with sick hospitals, nursing homes. He taught the retarded in the Christian education department in the churches where we did,
mm-hmm.
after we retired. And you see, you're never bored, never. I can't remember ever when I was bored with anything, because there's always something to do. And you have your house forever. Whatever your husband retires, it's a retired man with a wife. She never retires.
Really?
It's the same. Your life is the same. You've taken care of your house and your husband a number of years after the kids left and grew up. And he is there. You do the same thing. There's no change in your life. And I tell you, I'm thankful that he's here.
Mm.
Because I'm sure it'll be the people who are alone really tell me how lonesome they are. Yeah. So I'm glad that he's here and that we're busy as we are.
Right.
We're making one more change in our life now. We're moving to Minneapolis. Okay.
I bet you'll like it.
Oh, I think we'll like it.
Yeah.
I don't think I have much to add to it except I love people. I share with Will Rogers. I never met a man or a woman I didn't like. I didn't approve of some of the things they do, but I still love them. But if you love people, there's no end to what you can do.
Right.
When we left the farm 21 right now, 2,100 acres, all myself except during harvest time. I had big tractors and big equipment, and it kept me busy. But I was still active in farm bureau, farm organization, a church, in Holden Village, CFO, which is a Christian
Family Organization.
Okay.
What does that stand for?
A Camp Father Stop.
Oh.
It started by Glenn Clark from Minneapolis, St. Paul. Mm. He was with, what's that college? McAllister College.
McAllister.
In St. Paul. And I retired, joined the men's garden club. I'm not a gardener, but I'm not crazy about it either, but I have to do a lot of it. And everybody in the club is older than me. And
older than you?
Huh?
Old but
what?
Oh, everyone's old but you.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. And I got to be president, still am.
Even though you really don't like gardening,
really
right?
Don't like gardening.
Strange paths we weave.
We have an agricultural museum in our town, and I am the only person there that grew up in the horse age, horse era. But I was just, well, I started in, I was driving four horses on the road. I was 9 years old. So I started at a young age and went up to 32 horses on a combine for 6 years. A big machine with 32 horses out in front of it. And I loved it. And some people said they didn't like the job. I haven't had too many jobs, but on a farm you have all kinds of jobs.
Right.
And I've never found a job that I didn't like. It had to be done, so I plowed at it. And even though I don't like the gardening particularly well, but my wife, we have a half acre lot. You know how big a half acre is. As big as 500 acres on the farm.
Okay.
Yeah. But I'm enjoying what I'm doing, relating to people. I'm on the presbytery. I go to the church's presbytery meeting all the time, and I love people, and I love to do things, and I'm just having a good time, and the Lord has blessed me because our health is good.
Yeah. Praise the Lord. All right, Tracy. Yeah.
This is getting back to the younger side of it, but
the pre-retired.
The pre-retirement. Sometimes I get confused as to what, you know, where do I want to go? You know, do I really know what my vocation is? I think I still struggle with that a little bit in that, you know, I went to college and I have a great job and I do like it. Sometimes I feel a little unchallenged, but, you know, I change things around and I gather new responsibilities and new challenges. I'm in grad school right now. You know, and people always say, well, what do you want to do when you get out of grad school? And it's like, well, I really don't know.
So you're posing, how do we look at that question?
You know, how do you choose a vocation?
Well, I think Sharon said a couple of really good things, at least that made sense for me. Which was that part of it is instinct, intuition, better word, what I identify as the gut direction, and which I have followed all my life. When I got out of college, it was a similar thing. Anybody close to finishing college is in that terrible position of having been asked too many times in the last 5 to so many years, what are you going to do when you grow up? You know, as if there's one answer to that question, or as if you can know while you're still in college. I mean, having taught on the program that all the Chicagoans here taught on, I despite the fact they were getting a great chunk of education by their experience-based semester in the city, I do believe your education begins when you get out of school, in a large sense. Schooling is a right in this country, but it's a privilege for many, particularly college. And a lot of folks don't get there. So it's just a confusing thing for me. Folks go through college, it prolongs the confusion, keeps you out of touch with the intuition voice of your gut that much longer. And you have to spend a few years outside of college flailing about, being insecure, not doing what people think you're supposed to be doing until you can hear that voice. So the other part of this, which is a message we got from all the retired people, is that you can work if your goal is to do good work for people, or to be a peacemaker, or to be an agent for change, if that's your calling. You can do that until you pass into the next life. I mean, John, all these people are great examples of that, and it has nothing to do with holding down a job or working in someone else's shop or even working in your own. It does mean keeping your heart open and your hands and legs busy. So the combination of those two. Ingrid.
I wonder if there's a problem in our society that we all think that, it's sort of like we all think there's one perfect person for us to marry or fall in love with. We all think there's one perfect vocation or job
for us.
Mm-hmm. When you think about it, all jobs, for example, parenting involves changing diapers, which might not be your favorite thing about parenting, but you love parenting. Parenting involves learning to discipline. Working at Holden Village involves supporting Holden Village because you love the place and believe in it. It involves growing and becoming more of yourself, but it also involves whatever your job is here, which might not be your favorite thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
Or all of us working in garbology, which might not be our favorite thing to do. Maybe we need to address in ourselves the question of, am I looking for the perfect thing, or is life sort of you sort of have to be conscious of, do I support the goals of whatever where I'm giving my energy? What's more important, doing wonderful designs, if you're an artist, for a corporation that makes bombs that you don't support? You know, or because you like doing the designing of the step materials for them. And maybe I think that there's some confusion in my mind about all of that, and I think our society kind of tells us that we can only do the perfect thing.
Can I connect that with something that was said, I forget by who, where you pose the satisfaction with the job as against the respect it's got in the marketplace, not to mention the pay, benefits, etc., and that the two don't always match. Mm-hmm. It's a similar thing, picture that Ingrid is drawing in. As a person who has lived most of her adult working life without insurance coverage, for example, much less without a decent, you know, I mean, I think for years I was under the poverty level. I might still be, I don't know. It doesn't matter, I'm saying. I hasten to add, it doesn't matter, and I'm not keeping track. But the pull in our society towards reaching some material level of, and therefore measurable level of accomplishment is something that we always, it's an internal struggle, and it shouldn't be. I mean, we should be able to say, hey, you can't measure my value, my worth, by whether or not I have a VCR, a car, a condo, etc. Can't you see that what's more important is what and how I do? Now, we all also have to understand that we're sitting in this room, and yes, we are all white. I have to note that because I come from a place where usually everything isn't all white, and it does throw me off after a few days. I know the world isn't like this, and to me it also is important, because when I read the challenge of life, work, and worship at Holden Village, I had to think about the people who work at my restaurant, who we hire, who are non-English speaking, who therefore don't get the waiter jobs or the cashiering jobs or the bartending jobs where they have to interact with people who speak English. They get the back of the house jobs like dishwashing, busing, and cooking. Now it's a hard thing for me as an employer to recognize the double standard that by matter of necessity results from that, and how to try and look at us having the privilege of looking for work with meaning alongside of and in a society where many people look for work, period. They'll get the meaning, believe me. They'd like to have some work in order to have some food, in order to have a life. Meaning can come of its own course. So I don't mean to throw a wrench into it, but let us appreciate the privilege that we do enjoy sitting here saying, I don't want just a job. I want work that reflects my very soul, as we should. But while we do that, are we bringing anybody along with us? You know, even in our minds, even in our planning for what kind of work we do, are we going to make up for the fact that we have that privilege and a whole chunk of the population still does not? I lay that on us because I can't escape it, and I think if in fact we are agents for change or peacemakers, excuse me, in our vocation, we, boy, did that blow that sentence all out of my mind.
That's on the tape and everything.
Peacemakers.
That if we are, in fact, that, this is not something we can attain just by, you know, being people of privilege who have the great good fortune. Quit laughing so hard, Ruth. At my, and who have the great good fortune of being in a place like Holden Village, where we can toss these ideas around. That if, in fact, we are holistically peacemakers and want that to be part of our work, I put out that part of our work and our awareness of planning that includes, for me, bringing people along in some way. Does anybody have any ideas on how that happens?
There's also something about what you said, Katie, that there's a lot of people that don't have work and they just do want work, but many of those people even don't want just work.
That's right.
And we expect them to take those dishwashing jobs or those, you know, cleaning jobs or those bathroom sort of jobs just because they don't have anything, and set them up for a miserable life and a lot of distance between us.
The reason I grabbed this was that at the top of this sheet is something that sort of, I don't know what I felt about it, but it said, unfortunately, most forms of work are utterly unsatisfying, boring, and meaningless. And come now. This is America, the work ethic. We like all kinds of work. But in fact, what happens when someone has, you know, higher aspirations to do the same kinds of things that we're talking about having the aspirations to do, but starts 10 steps behind because they are denied entry in some or many ways.
I worked really hard working as a restaurant manager and putting myself through school so I could become, I thought the money doesn't matter, what matters is what I want to do with my life. So I became a florist. Well, the money does matter. I have to.
Some money.
I have to support myself. I have to make a living. So now I'm moving my career into becoming a hygienist, which doesn't pay that much more, but it pays a little bit more. And my attitude to work is very negative because of that, because of it. Work is work. I mean, it's hard for me to get out there and get there at
on time.
And be there continually. It's been a struggle, and I'd like to, switch it around to be a positive experience. And I don't know if I'm alone in this, but work is a four-letter word to me.
This is a good way to. Can someone tell me the time?
7:20.
Okay. The bell rang.
Did the chimes just ring?
Yeah, but we have to go at 7:30.
It's for Vespers. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Good. Then we got a few minutes because we only really just scratched the surface and heard from a few, but I think everyone said significant things. And there's Ingrid again.
Can we hear from some of the people who are volunteers at Holden about how it feels to work here?
Yeah, sure. How about it, John?
Well, I've been here a week.
Oh. I mean the John next to you. The John next to you, only because we haven't heard from him.
I've done some volunteer work before, and that volunteer in Holden is kind of, I don't know, this whole community thing just makes me buzz a little bit, and I feel good about it.
That's pretty clear. How about this, John?
Well, I volunteered up here about 12 years ago when I was still in college, between years, before I got a regular job.
Da-da-da-da.
And tied me down for a long time. But, I really enjoyed working up here because it was a chance to really see how a community can work together. And there's a lot of tasks, and yeah, we did a little bit of garbology, and we did ditch digging, and I drove a bus, and I did a bunch of other things, but there's some more fun than others. But it is a really rewarding thing, and I'm thankful for that opportunity I had 12 years ago. I still relish a lot of those memories.
Yeah.
You know, a chance.
And another thing, too, I don't feel any pressure that there's a quantity we have to put out like we do
in the real world.
Mm-hmm. There's time where you're just rubbing shoulders with somebody else and you're just doing something, and it just makes the work that much more pleasant if it is unpleasant. And it just
doing.
You're just doing it, and when you look around, all of a sudden these other people are doing other stuff, and it's like everything's pieced together, like you said. It's just clicking,
mm-hmm,
for some positive end. It's a good feeling.
I think one thing too in being a volunteer at Holden and staff here and the other places I've volunteered is that compared to my other job, that everybody is thankful for everything you do.
Yeah.
And where sometimes, a lot of times,
it goes unnoticed out there.
It goes unnoticed, or it's like instead of a thank you or everyone knowing that, everyone is doing their share, I think there's more people saying, no, she doesn't really work that hard, or, no, she works really hard and does the work of 10 people. And I don't think that happens in a community such as Holden, in where everyone is just giving of themselves. And I think that's one of the reasons that volunteerism really works, because everybody is giving of themselves. There are a lot of people who work at a real job, don't always have to give of themselves. They're there to make the money, some of them, and
take it home and go.
Right, and not really to give of themselves and to make the place that they work a better place.
Is that the moral of the story then? That the moral of the story of working at Holden is to be able to go back to your work and do that, take that, carry that value with you?
Mm.
You know? I mean, is that the moral of the story? Or is Holden a place that you just come and you do some fun physical work and you meet some nice people?
There's many of them.
Yeah.
For a lot of people, it's just the experience of living in community that kind of blow them away.
Right.
Having a lived in community where people do, you don't have to make all your own meals because other people are doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you clean toilets because other people aren't doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just all fits together and you can, spend time. So I think a lot of it is just the experience of living in community.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means. And then, learning different things about work and what you can take back with you.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of different roles that people take from here.
Yeah, that's one of the
questions. There'll be as many messages go away from this place as there are people in this room, because
mm-hmm.
we're all just that much different.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone will take away from it whatever they want to.
Mm-hmm.
I think one thing that's challenging to me, and I think perhaps to all of us, is being an artist. Now, he might be an artist in cleaning a toilet, fixing a toilet, planting these flowers. And I know of a man, well, a friend of mine home in Walla Walla. He's George Collins. He's 70 years old now. And he's been a livestock brand inspector, I guess, all his life. Do you know what a brand inspector is?
I would guess they look at the things and those cattle's bellies.
Oh, no.
Oh, I was wrong. Oh, I'm a little far afield.
Branding livestock. Take a hot iron and run a scar, a letter on
yeah,
the side.
Right.
It's a heated iron and put a scar. George is a brand inspector.
So he looks at him.
Yes, and he can read brands that nobody else can see. He, during the big years, he inspected 70,000 cattle a year. He's out in the mud, he's out in the cow manure, but he loves the work, and he is an artist.
Right.
He's the top brand inspector in the state, and run those brands. If they're too hot, the brand runs together, and if it's too cold, you can't read it. But George can read it. His eye is trained, he's an artist. He enjoys the work, and I'm so happy. All the cattlemen honored George just in the last couple of weeks. They honored him as Cattleman of the Year. The cattleman of that year doing the best job with his cattle, and irritating, and so on and so on. George didn't own a cow, but they honored him for his artistry in reading a brand.
That's pretty nice to be actually given that kind of recognition.
Yes.
In both of these articles that we have here, it is referred to that the importance of good work is like, or is art. Art pleases the intellect and the senses, and so does good work. In this sense, the worker artist collaborates with God in creating, and she or he experiences this labor, self-activity, as pleasure and enjoyment. I think that you bring up clearly a real important facet. And if you can find artwork in doing dishes, and if you can find artwork in guiding kids across a street safely, or all the myriad of possibilities, that much more guarantees a piece of satisfaction and a piece of what we